Hello, and
super cut of just today as we get over this.
Me. Hello, and welcome to the still no.
I mean, I just have to accept.
It's weird.
I just have to accept we're both gonna sound horsey. That's how it's gonna be today.
It's one of my favorite Pokemon.
Horsey's a Pokemon.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, red, blue, yellow.
It's blue.
That's all I know about Pokemon.
It's a seahorse.
I'm Hunter Pence, and you're listening to the Misplay Podcast. Oh, yeah.
Welcome to the Misplay, where we hoard our credibility when there's nothing to do with it. My name is Mark.
My name is Jason. Mark, your misplay actually gets us to our quotes from the notes this week, and it's a great one.
It's very on brand for everybody involved.
So, light backstory, we're playtesting a version of Animal Kingdom today, and credibility is currently in the game, kind of like a currency, something you kind of collect as you're playing the game, and then you spend it to do things. And Mark, as he said in his misplay, was hoarding it. He wasn't spending it. Mark reached the point in the game where I had designed it just to stop at 10. I didn't foresee anyone needing to go past that. They should be spending it. So there's no space on the slider. It stops at 10. And I'm so bad goes. Do you want to try an I'm so bad impression?
Wait, you can max credibility? That's stupid too.
The best part of that is the two. Because I don't know what else he means, but he means other things. It's just such a great quote.
Tears of joy.
I don't know what else about it was stupid, but that was one of the things. Just the addition of two just changes that so much. If he just wanted to say that was stupid, that's fine. I get it. But he wants to imply all these other things are stupid as well.
There were some complaints that led up to that may have been included in the umbrella of the matrix, the set of things that are stupid.
A stupid umbrella.
That's a little different.
Today we're going to be talking about that playtest. And I like, Mark, you called it a parallel version of Animal Kingdom.
Well, you put it to the team in the last meeting that maybe we should live in a bit more of an exploratory space for a little bit longer. And you're like, if anybody has time, bandwidth, capacity, I don't think that's how you said it, but I think that's how everyone heard it.
Yeah.
To make a parallel version of Animal Kingdom to compare and bring new ideas to what we've been working on. I think you were the only one who pulled the trigger and had time, capacity, and bandwidth to do it.
Oh, I didn't have any of those things, but I did it.
So as we develop the rally calendar version of Animal Kingdom, you had this opportunity to create the map version, and we played that today.
So we're going to talk about that playtest today. We're also going to play a Board Game Geek inspired trivia game in a new segment. And really, that's just so we can get into Board Game Geek's community spotlight, like our friends
over at Board Game Casual.
Today's episode is sponsored by Board Game Casual. Board Game Casual is a YouTube channel welcoming people into the board game hobby with video reviews, recommendations, unboxings, tips for accessorizing on a budget, and more. We've told you at length about the quality of their content on their channel, but we've never talked about the quality of their presentation. Board Game Casual shoots their videos from a top-down perspective that elevates their presentation. It's like they're conducting a symphony of a board game concerto. Next time you go to their channel, take that full time to watch, listen, and enjoy their content that they create for love of the art. I mean, games. Give Board Game Casual a view at Board Game Casual on YouTube at Board Game Casual channel.
Should we play some trivia?
We shall. We shouldn't. We shouldn't. Neither one of us would be, if we were going to pub night, quiz pub night, nobody wants you and I on their team.
No. Not for board game specific trivia, no.
But we thought it would be fun. We reached out to team member I'm So Bad, and we said, hey, for the podcast, do you think you can put together 10 questions for us that Mark and I can play a trivia game against one another? So we've got 10 questions that all come from Board Game Geek somewhere. Because Board Game Geek, just there's so much data there. There's so much you can pull from. And the instructions I gave I'm So Bad were, make it relatively easy. Probably want some multiple choice in there. And if I was breaking it down, I would have like 5 easy questions, 3 medium and 2 tough. So we'll see. So I haven't seen the questions yet. They're blacked out in my show doc. I'm going to highlight them and I'm going to read the question. And then we'll try to answer them to the best of our ability.
We both answer every question?
Yeah. Yeah. So honor system, right? If you say your answer first, that's not going to sway my answer.
Sure.
Okay. Question 1. This board game arena game is for 2 to 4 players and is in the classic push your luck, dice race, and abstract genres. Choices are Azul, Splendor, Can't Stop, and Wingspan. You've got your answer right away. I have the same answer. I think we're both saying Can't Stop.
Correct.
Right? It's been the game of the month for us, for me at least. That's probably why he put it in here. Highlighting the answer, Can't Stop.
1-1.
Question 2. This board game arena party game, I'm starting to think he doesn't know what Board Game Geek is.
Did he pull all the questions and use Board Game Arena as the reference instead of Board Game Geek?
I think that's the misplay. We're never going to end up in the community spotlight.
It's too late to go back now. Maybe we can end up in the Board Game Arena spotlight.
Oh, I like your thinking. This Board Game Arena party game is for 3 to 6 people, falls into the bluffing, player elimination, and surreal, silly, absurd genres. Is it Ark Nova, Skull, Catan, or Ticket to Ride?
Now, I think Catan is a silly and absurd game, but it's not my answer here. B, Skull?
B, Skull. That's my answer as well. I'm also saying Skull. Skull is correct.
2-2.
Oh, I'm So Bad. Question 3. How many games are available on Board Game Arena? 100, 300, 625, or more than 1,000? I'm going to go 300.
I went C, 625.
Answer is, there are currently 1,016 games available on Board Game Arena.
Too strong. I thought this was a trick question.
I just didn't think there were that many games. I only play 3.
So one of them is Can't Stop, one of them is Skull.
Yeah, and the other is 7 Wonders Duel.
Oh, not Splendor?
Oh, okay, Splendor. I play 4 games.
2-2.
Speaking of 4, question 4. In this game, each player governs one of 14 factions trying to develop more successfully than their opponents. It takes place in a magical world. Its inhabitants are able to transform the terrain they are living in. A faction either lives in the plains, the swamps, the lakes, the forests, the mountains, the wastelands, or desert, and each of them strives to transform the terrain according to its needs. Is the game Azul, King Domino, Terra Mystica, or Small World? I've only played Small World on the iPad. I don't think it's that. Azul, I think, is just a different style of game. So classic test-taking strategy. Narrow it down to 2. Terra Mystica just sounds like all of those things, right? Terraforming. I'm going to go Terra Mystica.
I also went Terra Mystica.
And that's the correct answer.
3-3. Good timing.
Question 5. These games are all great 2-player games on Board Game Arena, except 7 Wonders Duel, Tash Kalar, Targi, or Catan.
I'm really disappointed that he did a good job of like hiding a little bit of the difficulty of this question and then blew it with D, which is my answer.
Well, it's funny because I had the opposite reaction. I was like, well, now it can't be Catan, right? There must be a two-player version of Catan. But yeah, I'm going to go D as well, Catan.
I can't imagine he likes Catan either.
Catan, no. His quote is, Catan sucks. It's only, it's only for 3 to 4 players. Like credibility, Catan sucks too.
No, it wasn't credibility. It was the cap on it.
The cap. Question number 6. This family-friendly deck-building food card game is for 2 to 4 players and has an estimated time of 4 minutes per game. That's fast. Is it Sushi Go, Abandon All Artichokes, Harvest, or Donuts? Your answer's in?
Mm-hmm.
Man, so Sushi Go would be my first guess, but I don't know if Sushi Go is on there. I haven't seen it. I don't think he made up the name Abandon All Artichokes. It's like a 90s punk band. Harvest.
Just a metal vegan
donuts.
Band.
I'm going to go off because I think I'm going to be wrong, but it's like I'm taking the high risk reward one. I'm going to say donuts. I just, in my head somewhere, I see donuts on Board Game Arena.
I was really hoping you'd logic yourself into saying Sushi Go because I think it's Abandon All Artichokes and Sushi Go is not a deck builder.
The answer is Abandon All Artichokes. B Mark got it.
4-3. I feel like I'm playing the writer more than the quiz.
Question number 7. How many games on Board Game Arena have the dice tag? Let's start with, what is the dice tag?
No idea.
No idea. The dice tag.
Games that where dice are the central feature of the mechanics.
I'm going to go dice tag is like an award. So it got some sort of award. I have no idea. Dice tag. So, well, we know there's 1,016 games. So here are the choices. 45, 109, 173, 211.
Let's see those test taking skills.
There's one outlier. The 45 is the outlier. All the other ones are 109, 173, 211. If I was building the test, I would pick a middle number and then put outliers on the outside. So it's either 109 or 173. I'm going 109.
I always go C. That's the real test taking strategy.
So you're taking 173.
173.
Answer is 109. Let's go.
Oh, 4-4.
Let's go.
Jason has real test taking skills. Mark has not real test taking skills.
Question number 8. This trick-taking co-op science fiction card game made I'm So Bad rage at his friends and storm off, but it is actually quite fun for 2 to 5 players. Is it The Crew, Spades, Inside Job, or President? Well, that seems on brand. Let's start there. I believe the story. Don't you like the description of that game, though? That sounds like something you'd want to play, right? Trick-taking co-op science fiction?
I want you to answer the question before I say anything about this question.
Okay, darn, you know some things. Okay, so I've played Spades. It can't be Spades. It is a trick-taking game, but that has nothing to do with co-op science fiction. The Crew seems like could be spacey. Inside Job and President, I'm going to go with A, The Crew, just because of the science fiction tie-in.
You're right, it's A.
Mark hasn't even looked at the answer, he just knows, and there's a story here. So it is A, and here's his note. I have way more experience with trick-taking games than most of my friends. However, the thing that enraged me the most was that my friends couldn't understand that in a co-op, I'd try to help them instead of screwing them over. We failed so many missions constantly due to the lack of trust. Wildly tilting, but a fun game.
I feel like that story doesn't... I need more information because Crew is actually a really great solution to the co-op, like, quarterback problem in that the game defines what kind of information you're allowed to share. And so I'm very curious about how trust could be broken if you're playing within the confines of the communication that you're allowed to use in the game. Tell us more. I'm so bad. I'm so mad.
Right.
I'm also so mad because you got that question right.
Now we're tied up.
5-5?
4-4?
Something like that.
It's tied. Question number 9. The 17th century was not... I just love the way this one starts the story. The 17th century was not an easy time to be a farmer, I would imagine. Players begin the game with 2 family members and can grow their families over the course of the game. This allows them more actions, but remember, you have to grow more food to feed your family as it grows. This is still the question, by the way. Feeding your family is a special kind of challenge, and players will plant grain and vegetables while supplementing their food supply with sheep, wild boar, and cattle. Guide your family to wealth, health, and prosperity, and you will win the game. This is about which board game arena game? Is it Agricola, Lost Ruins of Arnak, Age of Innovation, Castles of Burgundy? I feel like you know the answer just looking at your face.
I'm really tilted that I don't know the answer.
Oh, okay, good, because I'm guessing too. Like, from the description, I want to go Agricola. It's a very popular game. I've never played it. I also really want to play Lost Ruins of Arnak, and I'll be mad if it's that, because then I feel like I should have known it was that. Age of Innovation sounds possible. And then Castles of, like, these are all, this is a tough one.
What do you think it is?
I'm going to go Agricola.
I think it's Castles of Burgundy.
Answer is Agricola.
Dang it.
And there's a description for this too. Despite the wordy description, this is one of my absolute favorite games and has one of the best feels of any game I've played. The mechanics really make it feel as though I'm a farmer in charge of growing my family and farm. Despite it being a worker placement game, it actually has reasonably high player interaction in the form of denying players scarce important spots by playing on them yourselves, potentially setting back your opponent a turn or forcing them to starve and get minus victory points.
The only reason I didn't choose Agricola is because I couldn't visualize the setting that IMSA had set up in the question. If it had just been, like, if you'd removed all the stuff about the family and the flavor in the 17th century, it would have been a slam dunk easy Agricola. And I'm annoyed because it's a game he talks about a lot.
Mm. I know it's a classic game. I think it's a classic example of us having not played a lot of classic games.
Because... But I played it.
Oh, you've played it. Okay. Well, that's a misplay on your part.
No, but I don't remember. I don't have that visceral feeling the way that I'm so bad describes it.
Question number 10.
I'm 1 point behind. I'm fighting for the tie.
This game is a card-driven bidding, racing, and betting game for 2 to 6 players based on Top Race, the award-winning design by the legendary Wolfgang Kramer. Players first bid to own the 6 cars in the race, then they play cards from their hand to speed them around the track. However, most cards will also move their opponent's cars, so figuring out just the right time to play a card is the key to victory. Along the way, players make secret bets on who they think will win the race. Whoever has the most money from their prize money, winning bets, and remaining bank wins. Is it Downforce, Ticket to Ride, Can't Stop, or Inking Gold? When I first heard it, I'm like, oh, this is Heat. I've never played Heat, but Heat's not, I don't think it's on Board Game Arena. Heat is obviously not one of the choices. He stuck Ticket to Ride and Can't Stop on here, trolling us a little bit, right?
Just like, giveaways, right?
Right? So it's Downforce or Inking Gold. So I'm in a position right now where I can't lose. I could go either one, but I can't win if I get it wrong. Downforce makes more sense, talking about things moving. I'm going Downforce. What do you got?
I also went Downforce.
Answer is Downforce. Never heard of it.
I almost chose D just because I knew you would guess Downforce. And if I wanted to play the odds, because either way, you'd be ahead.
Yeah.
I also looked at the text bar and saw the right length for Downforce on the highlight.
Look at you trying to scam the system.
I'm using the available information to play the game.
Oh, that's questionable. That's questionable. Mark is pointing out that the answers are all blacked out. But I feel like earlier on when Skulls was there, I think he blacked out additional spaces to make it less clear. But I
imagine quiz building fatigue set in by the end.
Well, let's thank I'm So Bad for putting together this Board Game Arena trivia game for us.
Find us in a few weeks for the Board Game Geek trivia game.
Yes. Where are we? Let's talk about where we're at with Animal Kingdom.
I don't want to call it a detour, but we playtested a radically different conceptualization of the game that you feverishly worked on this week, maybe at some amount of cost.
Yeah, there's a little bit.
And so I think you pointed out that I described it as kind of a parallel version or a parallel universe of the game. So since you're our lead designer tonight for what we've played, I was looking through our old show docs, and as you would have it, episode 6 of season 1 is where we played Supermarket Game. And I remember, at the beginning of the discussion of you explaining Supermarket Game and after having us played through, my first question for you was, how does it feel to be a game designer? So I want you to take a minute, reflect on what you were doing in terms of game design with Supermarket Game a year ago, and look at what your output for this version of Animal Kingdom was. And I think you need to give yourself a pat on the back. Animal Kingdom is a game that you can play from start to finish. It has a variety of strategies that are viable in it in its infancy. It's a significant change in terms of, I think, the way that you design games and the way that they play and how interesting they are, how fun they are. Supermarket Game, not so fun. So I'll ask you the same question that I did last year. How does it feel to sit around a table and play a game that you've designed with people?
It felt really good today. I think it went as well as it could. And I was really excited to get the game in front of people. And the feedback I got from the team was very much appreciated. I think we've come, and this is part of the Mark Katz 7 steps for playtesting, is how you capture feedback and how you set the norms for the playtest session. But I want to start by saying, I really appreciate you saying that about the game and thinking back to Supermarket Game. Yeah, I remember sitting here playing Supermarket Game with you a year ago, Ryan commentating, and the game wasn't interesting. The game wasn't fun. A really linear game that didn't go anywhere. For this version of Animal Kingdom, we playtested it and we got to an end condition and it felt really good to have people play the game. So there's an episode at some point last year where we said, we're still not game designers, late into last year. We're getting closer now.
I would argue we've crossed the threshold of making attempts at designing a game to being in the realm where we're designing a game. I think you could call yourself a game designer at this point. I think this version of Animal Kingdom is a good proof of concept for how your game design skill set has developed. We're calling this a parallel version, or we called this a parallel version tonight. How did we get to this parallel version from where we were last week, where we sat down with the team and we were actively preparing a different version with a revision that had more of a timeline? We called it the rally calendar version, where it was site specific, had a different approach, and you moved to this mapped version.
At the very beginning of that meeting, so 1 week ago today, we were talking about where we're at with the game. And one of the things I had said to people was, because it came up through a question through Peter, he had asked, how true do we need to stay to some of the original concept ideas? And I was trying to make the point that right now, you don't have to be true at all. If you want to take the base of this game for anything that it inspires, do that, change it, change anything except hippos, right? We talked about that. Don't change the hippos, but anything else, like, fair game, go at it. And I said, it would be really great if everybody could, you know, take some time and put together their own version of, like, how do you see this game being played? Because we had been playing a game that I think it's fair to say everybody thought wasn't interesting. The way that we were selecting the animals in the game and bringing them over to us so that they could become one of our voters wasn't interesting, wasn't fun. It was never a game as it currently was where I was like, this is going to be the game. This concept is going to be the game. And I had been I'd been saying that for a while. I'd been feeling that for a while. And I had been asking other people to, why don't you guys build something else? And I just decided I got to be the one who does it. I just have to do it. And I just decided to prioritize that this week over many other things I should be working on. But I made it a priority. I shelved some other things. And for a week, I just put myself into the tank. And every night I would come home and I would either take some notes or I would open up playingcards.io. At one point I opened up playingcards.io. I put a map in there and then I put some pegs and I just started moving them around on the screen. I was just moving a peg on a screen to see what that kind of invoked. What could I do? Okay, so I moved this over here and then I started thinking about, oh, events could trigger. And it was just really important to me to finish. I didn't want to, even though nobody really knew I was working on it until the last couple of days, I didn't want to not have a game ready, even though they didn't know I was bringing it.
I think based on team feedback, we're onto something, or you're onto something.
We're onto something. You know, a lot of the things that I'm doing in this version of the game come from conversations that we've been having about the other version. You mentioned Rally Calendar. I know to the audience, you know, map version, Rally Calendar, Animal Kingdom can be confusing. Internally, it's the way that we're kind of differentiating the different directions that the game is going. The calendar version being connecting this other idea of rallies, which are like debates or bringing people together, just like you would in a political realm, with the calendar of making the game go based on time and events and not just turns. And so Mark and Peter have been working on a rally calendar version. And some of the things that I have in my version for the what I'm calling map version, you know, those are coming from the conversations that we've been having with the team about all the other things that are going into rally calendar.
I do see the parallel between kind of the map that you drew and the way that the rally locations were laid out. So like I see a little bit of that connection there. But before we start going off into kind of mechanical details and maybe more comparison, I have a very clear picture because I've played both or seen both. Paint us the landscape of the version of Animal Kingdom that we played, that you built.
I'm going to start by giving a very just realistic version of what you're looking at when you play this game. And then if we have time, we can talk more about like what it could look like and Peter's comment about the map being a character. But right now on playingcards.io, and if you want to see, I posted a picture on Instagram and Blue Sky. It's, you know, it's really just 5 hexagons that are representing different habitats. And that's really what this version of the game is about. It is about taking your character who's vying to be the ruler of the kingdom and going to the other habitats to collect voters, to influence them, to have them come over to you. And then there are a couple of other sections. One of them has public stances, and these are cards that can be played by you, but they can also be played by other people. They can sign on to it. So if I took a soft stance and I said, I'm going to take a soft stance and collect the strong trait, Mark or somebody else who's playing can play off of that and say, oh, I'll do that too. And if they do that, there's a bonus for me being the one to have selected it first. And then there is a credibility tracker. And the credibility is, it's basically the currency in the game right now for doing things. And so there's one, it goes from 0 to 10. There's a max for every player. And then you have a player board in front of you. There's a space for you to identify the traits that you've collected, a place for you to bank your voters, and then your lean section in front of you. I'm looking at the end of the game from earlier. I have 5 animals still in my lean section that I wasn't able to bank.
The public space where the hard and soft stances live now is a pretty big change. What was your thinking behind moving to a public space rather than an individualized space?
The idea there was that when you're running for something, when you're, you know, a politician, you are saying these things not privately. You're saying a lot of things publicly. You're going on television. You're posting on Blue Sky.
At the misplay.
And other people have a chance to respond to that, right? You're running for something. You go on television and you say something about your policies and what you want. I want to be able to respond to that. Or I want to be able to sign on to that and be like, I agree with that person said. I want to do that too, but I'll do it a little bit differently. And I was looking for ways to create more, I don't want to call it cooperative interaction. It's kind of like this competitive cooperative interaction in that you take the stance first. You're the one who's saying, I'll do it first. I'm choosing one of these public stances. I'll do it. I'll say it. Does anybody want to sign on to that? And if they do, then you get the bonus. You get the credibility for it. So yeah, you're letting other people do something else on your turn, but there's a benefit for you. I had a turn where I gained 3 credibility playing one of those cards. That was really great because it was like refilling all of my credibility that I need for other things. So the idea was just to kind of tie it into what I think really happens in politics. And I want to say, I've never seen it before in a board game. There's 1,000 games on Board Game Arena. Somebody probably has it there.
The last kind of pieces I think that are missing from the physical, literal way that the game plays are, you did find a way to incorporate wild cards, events, and hippos into this version. Take us really briefly through that, because I actually think the way that the pieces move and trigger those specific cards is really interesting. And then take us through the end game, and then we'll go into a little bit of feedback and debrief that we had with the team.
Yeah, the 3 other cards in the game, events, hippos, and hidden agendas. Honestly, this was the part that I was most happy with how the feedback came from the team, because I said to the team, all 3 of these things are not implemented correctly. Hippos are not set up right. Events, kind of random, and the hidden agenda items are totally just going to be wild. They could be chaos. And the part that I really liked was just trying to figure out how to do it, not necessarily the result of doing it. Does that make sense?
I think so. You were looking for kind of a gameplay turn sequence way for those things to be a part of the game, regardless for how well they hit or how well they were balanced or what their effect on the power level of the game might have been.
So hippos, for example, was something that we've talked about before on the podcast. People have said, I have said, I love hippos in the game. Other people have said, why would I ever play a hippo? We had a playtester say to us, why would I ever play a hippo? It just doesn't make any sense. I'm taking a turn off to disrupt you slightly. And so my spin on that was, hippos could be played for free and you could get free hippo cards if your credibility was low enough. And so that was a way to kind of disrupt other people. And hey, I lost 2 animals in front of me to hippo cards that got banked by somebody else. But it wasn't set up correctly to be a more viable thing to do. We can tweak it and make it better. The events were things that I came up with that I really liked, that when you go to a habitat and then someone else goes to the habitat, it triggers something. Something occurs in the game. And in this version of the game, when 2 people went to a habitat, an extra animal got revealed. So it was a perk to follow somebody and you could really benefit from taking 2 animals instead of 1. But then the wild card there was if 3 people went to a habitat, a bigger event triggered and it could really disrupt the game. And it wasn't about those events, like you said, it wasn't about them working amazing. It was just about getting people thinking about that. And there was really good feedback immediately when we did the first event with 3 people. I'm So Bad wasn't with us. It was me, you, and Peter in one of the habitats. And the card that came up said, anybody with a strong animal can immediately bank one. Cool. Great. Well, I'm So Bad wasn't even in that habitat. He had a strong animal and he got to bank it. And he said right away, he's like, I think it should only trigger for the people who are in that habitat, that those 3 people should benefit and not me. And that was like never crossed my mind when I was originally coming up with it. But that's the thing I like about making a game with other people is just those completely different immediate ideas. It's like, oh, that makes total sense.
I think the feedback about hippo cards kind of falls in that same vein. You described your thinking about the functionality of hippo cards as one way, and they were written a different way in the rules. And then the way that people were playing based on how it was written was different. And so the aggregate of trying to get to what's the best implementation in this moment for that card, I think is another example where the group mind was able to bring the idea that you had more into a line that fit the game better.
Yeah. And then the last piece was the hidden agenda cards. And we've talked about it with Rally Calendar that we've always wanted characters to have asymmetry, that they would have their own abilities. We've also talked about having like secret agenda cards. So it's, remember in the first versions of this game, we were super worried about it just be a counting thing. Okay, there's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. Okay, I'm going to take the swimming animals because there's 5 of them. Well, with the hidden agenda, it would be interesting if you got bonus if you could get 1 of everybody, right? So you weren't trying to get all the swimming. And so when we got to the end state of the game, the end state triggered when two of the habitats were emptied. There were about 12 animals in each habitat. The end condition of the game was two habitats go empty. And that happened. And after everybody finished their turns, then instead of everybody having their own hidden agenda, we just flipped one over. And then on that hidden agenda card, it was something that could disrupt the voter state of the end game. And it almost, you got right back into it with it because it was something to do with flying creatures. If you had flying creatures, you could roll a die. And if you got the right numbers, you would bank them. And you had a couple of flyers you banked right at the end of the game.
It did bring me close in terms of catching up, but was not the kind of way that I would have wanted to catch up. What a feel bad moment for I'm So Bad, our winner of our playtest tonight, where clearly played the game better than I did. And I just like roll my dice better and end up one banked voter ahead of him on this like random flip. So this is another example of it was just working the concept into the game, not close to the final implementation. We've talked previously in other meetings about the possibility of using like a hidden mission style type of play to be able to give us more voters. And I think that's the direction that those hidden agenda things will have to move. But going into some of the feedback, I know we talked a little bit about, we got into Peter's feedback about making the map more of a character, have more personality and feeling to it, or more things that it can do. And Scott was talking about the possibility of having more ways of interacting with habitats rather than just moving to them. For me, I think one of the most elegant things and one of the biggest changes I see in the way that you designed it is you had a rule where if you had all of the traits on an animal that you moved into their habitat, you could bank that animal immediately. And I thought that was such a nice, elegant reward that played into the incentives of the things that you wanted players to be doing and wasn't a over the top. It was a very subtle but very appropriate reward for the way you built your character. And as part of that, one of the things that I felt strongly about is in the character cards, having a way of building your platform as a politician. I actually think your implementation of the game in this playtest was a really interesting way of players building their platform. I think there are tweaks and things that we'll want to explore to make it different, but that's the closest to in my head when I've been like, oh, we need the characters to build a platform. This implementation is the closest that we've seen in that so far also.
Going back to what you said in the beginning about how I feel, you know, especially coming off of last year with Supermarket Game and, you know, the other games that weren't quite games, hearing you say that is really cool, and I really appreciate that. And yeah, I think that's a good example of one of the highlights from the playtest that we want to take and make sure we carry with us, but also use it as an example of, let's get other things to that level. How do we get other things to feel like that? It kind of helps us know, like we talked about, how do we want the game to feel? We want it to feel like that. We want it to feel like you move to that space, you've built up your character, you get them and they just slide over, right? They're going to vote for you. They believe in your platform. That's how we want the game to feel. So let's get more things to that level.
You highlighted in the feedback comments during our debrief, Peter's comment about making the map a character. What is it about that that drew your attention and made you make a special note of it?
There's been a few times in our meetings where people have talked, and when they're speaking, I close my eyes. And I go, and I really listen. I really listen to what they're saying. And when Peter was saying that, that made total sense to me. When we're thinking about building a game that we're going to be really, really proud of, that we want to play again, and we want to put our name on it and put it out there to other people, what Peter was saying made so much sense to me. And just because we've been thinking about it a lot lately when we're talking about how do we want the game to feel, because on my screen when we played today, the map was just 5 hexagons. And Peter was talking about how you build that world, how we take those 5 hexagons and build out a little community where all of these animals live. This entire, we can't say biome, trademarked, this, all of these habitats, and what else can go inside of that? And when you're playing this game, to feel like you're there, right? Right now we're standing on hexagons, right? You're not sucked into this world. Like the little bit of art on the board that is going to be visually interesting. And this has got to be great hearing this from me, Mark, as somebody who said many times, I would play with black and white cards and I don't care about pictures. But that really got me thinking, how can I go next step for me? How can I make it so you're not just on these hexagons, but there's other things going on around you where you feel like you're in this world? So that's why it's top of my brain now.
I think the work and time that you put in really shows in this version of the game. And I do think you should feel proud and accomplished in terms of what this playtest accomplished and how it moves the game forward for us as a group, as a team. I'm still looking forward to trying. I think we should still play. I'm hoping we'll still play the rally calendar version and kind of take aggregate pieces of things that work well from both games and, again, use them to elevate.
I've spent some time telling you kind of how I want map version to feel and what I kind of want the player to be experiencing while they're building their character. When you're thinking about rally calendar version, which is the next version that we're going to play, what is the feeling in that universe?
I think based on Peter's description of the rally version and kind of how increasingly strongly I feel about this idea of a calendar of events that drives the game to completion more than a set number of turns or a finite number of voters, I envision the rally calendar version having more of a feel where players come together more frequently to compete over something. Whether it's a debate, whether it's a rally, whether it's an ad campaign, but there's more of a sense of players go out and prepare and build their platform and try to amass voters that way. But then there are these moments where you have to come together because you have to engage with your opponent's platform. And through whatever those means of coming together are, there's like a voter prize, essentially, right? You're competing for a larger number of voters where like maybe there's a world where it's similar to the version that we played where when you go out and do your individual things, you're working for like one or two voters. But when you come into these like group meetings where you're competing over the event, there's a larger stake of voters to be had. And I think that's how I conceptualize kind of rally calendar in my head in terms of the way players would compete and interact with each other. That's a little bit different than it felt very much like jockeying for position in the map version, which I thought was very compelling, but not necessarily not the only way of having players jockey for position.
Well, I look forward to playing.
The Misplay podcast is brought to you by Mike C., Missy, JP Savard, Parney, Kyle Flowers, Adjos, Brian, Bins, and Peter. Consider donating at patreon.com/themisplay. If you'd like to become a featured sponsor of the show, find our FAQ in Discord.
And accompanied. Oh my gosh. Say it. Accompanied by.